Hello, and welcome to the Art of the Cut podcast, brought to you in partnership with Boris Effects and our sponsor, Jump Desktop. I'm Steve Hallfish. I'm a working film and TV editor. For the last 9 years, I've done nearly 400 interviews with the world's best editors. I've been using Boris Effects products for more than 20 years, and I'm proud to partner with them to bring you some great filmmaking content. Today, we're talking with Harry Yoon, ACE, Laura Zempel, Jordan Kim, and Nat Fuller about the TV series Beef. This is the first in a series of 6 Art of the Cut episodes leading up to the Emmy voting. Upcoming shows will feature editors from Andor, Picard, Poker Face, The Last of Us, and Wednesday. Harry Yoon, ACE, has been on Art of the Cut many times before, most recently for the film Minari, but also for the films Detroit, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, and Best of Enemies. Harry was also an editor on the TV series Euphoria. Laura Zempel was also a previous guest on our Euphoria episode. She's also been an editor on the TV series Dispatches from Elsewhere. Jordan Kim's credits, among others, include Portlandia, Yo Gabba Gabba, Awkwafina is Nora from Queens, and the great satirical show Documentary Now, which was featured on Art of the Cut several years ago. Finally, Nat Fuller edited the film The Peanut Butter Falcon, along with Kevin Tent ACE. He's also been an editor on numerous episodes of Stranger Things, among other projects. Before I hop into our discussion with Harry Yoon, ACE, Laura Zempel, Jordan Kim, and Nat Fuller, a brief thank you to our sponsors. Jump Desktop is a high-performance and secure app that lets you virtually connect to your editing bay as if you're physically there. Keep all your assets in one place and connect to your powerful editing bays from anywhere. Jump Desktop's high-performance, remote desktop protocol lets you edit from any low-powered laptop. With end-to-end encryption, native support for macOS and Windows, and multi-monitor support, you can be productive from anywhere. Jump Desktop also has collaborative screen sharing for collaboration with your team. See what thousands of editors have been using to get their work done from across the world. Visit jumpdesktop.com/cut to begin your free no-limits 14-day trial today. And to our partner, Boris Effects. I've been using Boris Effects and Sapphire for more than 20 years, so they're not just a sponsor to me. I feel like they've been a partner in my cutting room for decades, helping me to deliver on the creative wisdom of my clients, directors, and producers. For all of us, our work is about bringing a creative idea to the screen, and for me, Boris Effects is one of the important tools that I use to do that. To see how they can help you on your latest project, head on over to borisfx.com and check out the Boris Effects suite, which includes Sapphire, Continuum, Mocha Pro, Silhouette, and Optics, all in a low-cost monthly or annual subscription. If you want to read this interview with great visual support, you can go to borisfx.com/AOTC. That site also has other great filmmaking content, so keep that bookmarked. And now, Harry Yoon, ACE, Laura Zempel, Jordan Kim, and Nat Fuller on the TV series Beef.
Hi, my name is Harry Yoon, and I was one of the editors on Beef.
Hi, I'm Laura Zempel, and I am one of the editors on Beef as well.
My name is Jordan Kim. I'm also one of the editors on Beef.
My name's Nat Fuller, and I too am one of the editors on Beef.
I started watching Beef a while ago, and I just finished the final 2 episodes today. It's fresh in my mind. One of the things that I wanted to talk about, and you can decide who's going to discuss this, is collaborating with your fellow editors. How much collaboration was there, or were you pretty much islands unto yourselves?
I actually think we were a pretty collaborative team. Harry started us off with the pilot, and then at a certain point, he went on a trip, so I came on for a couple weeks in the middle to do some work on the pilot, and then you came back, and then you took it back over. And then Jordan worked on episodes 5 and 8, and then Nat and I worked with those. We started this season remote, so we were all at home. At a certain point, we went into the office with everyone, but then we ended up sending the majority of the team home, and the editor stayed in the office. So Nat and I were on the show the longest, and so he and I had rooms next to each other, and we would check in with each other every day, just like, how's it going? What are you doing? Sunny, our showrunner, and Jake's producing director, they were in the office with us most of the time. And so they would bounce back and forth between rooms and pull us into each other's rooms. So we were constantly in conversation with each other.
We started the show block shooting. They cross-boarded almost all of the episodes. And so we were getting scenes from 1, 7, 5. It was all hands on deck from the very beginning. Only middle to later in the process did these episodes start to take holistic shape and people took over the finishing of them, basically.
It's an interesting dynamic with streaming and kind of the way TV has changed, in that you used to do the pilot and then weeks later you'd do the other ones, and but you four were working across the whole series at all times. Mm-hmm. Does that change things? Does it change the way you think about episodes when you can actually see other episodes before and after you? Jordan?
I think it was helpful to check in with each other throughout the process when we're working on episodes that are in different parts of this larger story structure and see, does this one thing get referenced? Do I need to keep that thread going? And I think that was something that we all were adjusting throughout the process. Little storylines that get hinted at, that maybe one part gets taken out, and so then you might not need to revisit it later on, or you need to just keep in mind all the little pieces that have been building from the beginning of the season to the end. One thing that I was just remembering was on the pilot, there were a couple key scenes like the car chase that were not filmed until the very end of production, right? Or close to the end. So we had been watching cuts of the pilot for quite a while. And it wasn't really until that scene was shot and cut into the episode that it really started to come together, the bigger picture of what they were going for, because there are little moments in that sequence that reverberate and are referenced throughout even later episodes that I was working on, episode 8 and 5.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think one of the things, especially as somebody, as Laura mentioned, that was primarily involved early in the process and then had to go away and then touched only on the first episode again a little bit later when I came back because I had to move on to a feature. There's a kind of emotional puzzle as far as where the characters are through the series. And I'm not just talking about Danny and Amy. I'm talking about all the secondary characters as well, especially someone like George, who's such a foil through the whole series in a way. It was really hard to get a bead on how to shape particular individual scenes until you started to see the other episodes take shape and to see where we were targeting things, not just on the page, but from a performance standpoint. As somebody who left early and then had the pleasure of being more of an audience as these episodes got finished and as the series emerged on Netflix, it was such a pleasure to see how Laura and Jordan and Nat have done this beautiful shaping of those performances, because it was not clear from early dailies like how everything was going to fit together. I imagine that that was part of the challenge, was like things were hard to lock, I'm sure, until the very end, because there were all these nuances of character that you wanted to seed in later episodes that couldn't be done until you saw more of the shape of this thing.
It is interesting how it's all one big piece, and then suddenly at the end, it's okay, we have all the pieces now, and now we have the complete picture. So that's the interesting thing about the crossboarding, where one of my first scenes was from episode 7, and I'm like, okay, I'll cut it this way, and I'll put a pin in it, and I'll come back to it later once I know what these people are coming from, going to. You do have to like kind of work on it in a little bit piecemeal. And then once everything comes into place, you're like, okay, now I can go back and maybe change this subtle little performance here, or maybe take out this scene like Jordan had mentioned. I think we had one, Laura, where she watched one of my episodes and there was a line that one of the characters said that affected something that happened in her episode. So she went to Sunny and Jake was like, hey, like George said this line. And then later on in my episode, it doesn't make sense now that he said that line. And so that collaboration was also there, where we would watch each other's episodes and make sure that we were tracking the whole season.
Yeah, to speak to that, one of the things that really came together for me once I started seeing episodes as a whole was just the balance that the show has between darkness and humor. Danny and Amy are going through, they talk about this void inside of them. We wanted to convey that to the viewer, why these people are the way they are, and give that enough weight. We have so much humor in the show, and finding that balance, especially with the secondary characters, of just how funny is this scene supposed to play, or how grounded is this scene supposed to play? That was the calibration throughout the whole series. So those emotional moments really land.
I'm working on volume 2 of Art of the Cut right now, and the chapter I'm working on today is balancing tone and temperature of performances based on context. Talk to me a little bit about that, where during dailies you might have cut something one way, and then when you are able to see either all of the episodes or at least the full episode, you realize you need to change the performance.
I would say of all the editors, probably have come from more of a straight up comedy background. That was one of the things I was really excited about this show, was to work on something that kind of blended those tones and to learn from these other editors, the crew, about the process and the differences of working on something that was a little bit more kind of layered and nuanced with the tones. And one of the things that I really took away from the process was working with Jake, producing director, on 108. One of the things that struck me was one of the scenes that is a little bit more emotionally intense, we just added back in so much air and so much space to let the characters consider, think about, and react and see those reactions non-verbally resonate with them in a way that I didn't typically have the time for or would totally make sense for in the more comedic stuff that I've worked on. In that first director's pass from my editor's cut, we added about 3 minutes back in of really just people sitting and thinking about and processing these kind of intense conversations that they're having. And that really stuck with me. In my first cut, I'm thinking a little bit about trying to balance not having a crazy TRT for my first editor's cut, but still trying to let some of these scenes breathe. And I was really impressed with how much Jake was wanting to prioritize really sitting in these moments and at least trying them out to see how far we can push it to even have the rhythm almost feel like a feature at times with some of these scenes.
In addition to that, the technique of allowing moments to breathe that Jordan's talking about, one of the things that is striking about the way Lee Sung-jin, our showrunner, approached these moments for these characters is there's a level of authenticity that sort of doesn't allow it to go into farce when it really could. Mm-hmm. In particular, we're talking about how people are reacting to, especially the Korean church scenes. It would have been very easy in that moment when Danny walks into the church after he's almost committed this terrible act and is feeling contrite. It would have been very easy to make that, play that scene for laughs, right? Of how absurd it is that he's having this kind of repentant moment. And yet, as funny as it is when he starts to break down, there's also this real feeling of specificity and an understanding of what that moment feels like for someone who's genuinely in that context, in that cultural context, in that spiritual context, etc.
Yes, I agree. I feel like we have a very dark comedy vibe in our show. One scene that I find rode that line was when George and Amy are talking to each other in the bedroom, and she's having this very deep omission of this is how I'm feeling, this is how I'm feeling. And then George just completely misses the cue. And it strikes a balance because it's actually funny the way he reacts, but it's also sad because he's not there to support his wife in this moment. So I think that the writing and the scenarios have that balance built in. And then it was our job to make it really sing. And I think that scene in particular where I always laughed at George being such a doofus missing the cue, but I'm also like, at the same time, I'm feeling very sad because Amy has lost this connection and it makes her actually spiral a little further and shut down even more.
That makes me think of the editor's need to be empathetic to the human condition in itself, but also to the specific conditions of the characters. Does anybody want to talk about how you saw yourself, saw the truth in a scene that you that affected you and emotionally connected with?
When I first read the scripts, I was very drawn to Amy, no surprise. But I think it's such a difficult thing to convey this sort of like inner yearning, especially when Amy's life looks so perfect on the outside, and yet she has this thing inside of her. And so it's what Nat was speaking to, just feeling, keeping the audience tracking Amy's emotions with everything that's pent up inside of her. And she does look for moments of relief, like talking to George in the garage when she gets home from the road rage and he just shuts her down. Ali Wong's face just ends up, like those moments where she just completely shuts down. I could always check in with her whenever I felt that switch. Those were the moments that I clung to and really tried to build scenes around.
Let's talk a little bit about spotting performances and building things around them. Is there anybody else, Jordan or Nat, Harry, where you saw an emotion, a nonverbal thing in a scene that you felt like you needed to build around that moment?
One of the scenes that I really connected with was in 105 when Danny and George are bonding over his sculptures in his studio. Steven is so good that it was really hard not to want to cut to him at every moment and just see all the nonverbal things that he's doing in this very delicate tightrope of manipulation that's going on, where all these characters are desperate to connect with someone, but they don't really know how exactly. And they're always running into their own flaws in that pursuit. There's so many moments like when Danny and Amy are in the house together, when they're just about to connect and then Danny registers that it was Amy in the car. There's a similar feeling in that scene with Danny and George bonding over the sculptures, where they're so close to really connecting in a genuine way, but there's all these other layers of things going on. And I think that's something that is very relatable to people, even just the layer of feeling as a creative person exposed and wanting that validation and recognition that someone else gets what you're trying to do. That was one of the heartbreaking things about that scene with George. He felt seen in a way he hadn't by a lot of the people around him.
That's a really great point. One of the things that I was reminded of is how consistently in the show, the decision making and the realizations only serve to continually isolate the characters. There's something that they know, there's something that they realize, there's a decision that they make that makes them feel even more alone. That happens consistently. And it really depends upon this incredible writing and setup where it has to land in that close-up and you realize, oh, I'm even more alone now. That's why I think ultimately the show becomes moving. The only person who truly sees their counterpart is this enemy that's been building up over the course of the season. They're the only one who truly knows how depraved or how repentant that their counterpart is. But it's because each time that we've seen Danny become increasingly more alone, we've seen Amy become increasingly more alone, and it's happened in these shifts in their expression as things land on them. You watch Amy even at the beginning, and then she's confessing this like incredibly private moment of like when she felt at peace, but it's to her child and her child is sleeping. And that's the only time in which she can like truly be vulnerable, truly be heard, truly be understood, and no one's listening. That just keeps happening again and again. And I think that's what ultimately makes the series and our heroes feel so identifiable, is because I think if there's any consistent emotion in our continually alienating society, it's this feeling that we are alone and we might not be understood in a way that we truly want to be understood, even though we're constantly surrounded by interaction. I think that's why the show might resonate with the audience in the way that it has.
The key to the show for me is that these characters are getting this like vicarious energy from this perceived external enemy, when obviously they're their own worst enemy. And that's the conclusion that they're all coming to throughout the process, is they're constantly running into these same problems. And the consistent thing is their own flaws. So I think that's the kind of duality that is really interesting about the show and very relatable to a lot of people.
Harry was talking about the fact that you realize that Ellie Wong's character, Amy, is isolated. It always seems like that is revealed in reaction shots, because the thing that's isolating her is usually a good thing, like her husband talking to her in very nice ways. And that's not revealing of her isolation. It's her reaction that reveals her isolation. Can you talk about the reactions and using those reactions to reveal characters' inner thoughts?
One of my favorite scenes is in episode 9 when Danny confesses to his brother Paul that he threw away the applications. There's a lot of nonverbal cues there. Both Danny and Young did a great job. But my favorite part was when he's holding out his arm, come with me, come, let me save you. And Danny's saying, no, go away, go away, go away. And the only way that he can truly get Paul, his younger brother, to go away is say, I did this horrible thing to you and ruined your life. And then you see Young's arm just drop down, and that's it. That was the signal. Okay, I'm going to go now. And I think there's a lot of unspoken power in that moment, especially. Then you see Danny alone, like Harry had said, like he's pushed everybody away and he's like truly alone in that moment.
Nat, that is one of my favorite scenes. I love how you cut that. When you all were talking, I was thinking of another Paul scene. And it is funny because Paul is the bridge between Amy and Danny. And one of my favorite scenes for Allie and Paul is in the hotel room in Vegas when they are talking to each other and Amy is actually being vulnerable and she's been shut down by George so much. And then here comes this like young guy who is actually open and thinks differently. And it's exhilarating for her, but she finds someone she can talk to. I love the moment when Paul is talking about Danny and he says, I think he's depressed. He blames everyone but himself. He starts talking, he unpacks Danny to Amy and we just hold on Amy listening. And it's such a good performance from Allie. She's just taking it in. And I feel, for me, I feel like that's the moment when she realizes there's more to this guy that I got in a road rage thing with than I anticipated. And maybe he's like me. Are we both fighting the same demons? There's just so much going on in her head. You can just see her wheels turning. And we're hearing everything that Paul is saying, but watching Amy process it is more important. And I think it resonates more for the viewers to be able to watch Amy process this description of Danny's psyche rather than watching Paul deliver the lines. And that's one of those moments where I really think shot choice and performance adds a whole other layer to that scene. Because we as an audience, we already know this stuff about Danny, but watching Amy register it is so moving. And I think it's a good fulcrum for the series. It's just that moment of finding more out about your enemy and humanizing them.
You mentioned shot sizes, and there were two places where I noticed shot sizes. And one of them is that scene with telling him the brother that he didn't send in his applications, that he threw his applications to college away. They're separated. One brother's way up high on a wall, and the other brother's down on the ground. And I don't think you go to a close-up there. Sometimes it doesn't need to be a close-up, like we all think, oh, the close-up is what reveals the emotion, but it can be a posture thing. It can be a dropping of an arm emotion, which then you've got to play on a wider one. The other one I was thinking of is in the final episode where Amy and Dan are lost and they're screaming at each other from opposite rocks. The whole thing is played on super wide shots. Can you talk to me about that choice of playing an emotional scene on big wides?
The finale, Nat and I both did a lot of work on, but I did the initial pass with Sonny, our showrunner. He directed that episode. It's the first episode that he's directed. And I got the dailies for that scene with that huge wide. And my first cut, I held on the wide two shot for probably way too long just because I loved it so much. It felt so distinct and it was such a bold choice. And I was so excited by it. Sonny and Jake and Hikari, all of our directors, did such a great job in shooting this. It adds such a level to the characters and the emotion. The expanse of those wide shots in the finale, it also just helps them feel so isolated. It's these two people who have driven everyone else away, and they're this big in the frame, like very tiny. And you just feel the expanse of how far they've gone on this road rage thing. Like, why can't you guys just let it go? You're literally going to die in the woods. And yeah, the way it was shot, it was just so fun. And then you hear them screaming. So that's the comedy. It's the isolation plus the comedy plus the rage. And it's a blast.
It also sets up, they're so far apart. And then a couple scenes later, they're literally side by side.
I rewatched the finale this morning right before this interview, and the scene when they're poisoned and they're laying next to each other on the ground and they're looking at each other. When Danny says to Amy, I see your light, you poor thing, I am always gutted by that. That's when I lose it. That's the release. These two people who've gone so far and through all of this, and here they are just inches away from each other on the verge of death, and they can finally let it go. It's a testament to the way it was conceived and shot, and I'm so happy all of the emotions came across.
I think it's a good opportunity to talk about Grace Young's amazing production design too. I think everybody that was interviewed in coming on to the show, one of the topics that came up was this idea of what is the void? That sense of emptiness, that sense of meaninglessness, that sort of ache that we all carry around. Amy's home is a good example, right? It's this modernist, slightly brutalist construction of mostly concrete. It's supposed to be this achievement, this home that she's redecorated, and yet it doesn't necessarily feel warm. Sometimes, depending upon how it's captured, it feels bare and almost prison-like in a way. We wanted to emphasize that these are not hospitable places in the subjectivity of the characters. That's something that happens consistently through the show. Jordan's home is another great example of that. It's supposed to be this space that we all dream about, right? This home of a billionaire, and yet it feels very inhospitable. It feels very dangerous. It feels very unappealing. So you have this irony of you imagine a billionaire's house to be this amazing place, and yet you wouldn't want to spend a whole lot of time there. There is that tension in almost every space.
I also think compared to a lot of typical shows and staging and coverage, I felt like the use of the singles was something that made the tone feel a little bit more isolating and more in the head of each character versus dirty over the shoulders that you typically get in these conversations between two people. I think that helps to feel very close to the characters and feel very much like they're isolated in these spaces.
Talk to me about intertwining the various stories. Were there places where you felt like you needed to change the script cutting between storylines in the cutting room?
The original structure of the first episode was much more separate. So there was originally Danny's story and then Amy's story, and then only at the very end did they re-encounter each other. And it was such a bold choice that Sonny originally wrote. I think it worked really beautifully. But as we were trying to emphasize how intertwined and how parallel their lives were, we started experimenting with more of the crosscut structure that you see in the final cut. One of the pleasures for me is that we put together that cross-cutting structure so that you started to see these parallels. One of the beautiful things that Laura did was that she started finding shots that emphasized these beautiful match cuts that were both visual and emotional. My favorite example is the moment when Amy is doing something very weird with the gun, when she finally gets it out of the safe. That used to be its own comic and strange sequence. But to cross-cut it with Danny's obsessive search for the house and those two bits of heightened emotion, showing them going back and forth and propelling them towards each other into this climactic encounter, is something that was discovered in the cutting room. And Laura did that so beautifully. That happened at little moments through that episode, so that you got an encapsulation of you have to see these characters in relation to each other, and you have to understand these characters' lives and their obsessions and their faults in relation to each other. That's something that emerged as we worked on that episode with the key creatives.
Laura, can you think of any other examples of those juxtapositions that happened because those things were intercut when they weren't meant to be?
The pilot is really the one where we experimented the most. Finding anything that could draw parallels between Amy and Danny for our viewers was really what we were the most zeroed in on. Amy's at Coyo House and the woman asked to have a photo taken with her, and we cut on the sound of a lens snapping, and then we cut to Danny installing the Ring camera. So we go from camera to camera, drawing the parallels of this is Amy's work life, this is Danny's work life. Danny sees Paul so we can get a sense of his home life. Then Amy comes home and we meet Fumi. So work, home. Trying to just really finesse and hone in on the similarities between these two characters, because even though their lives are so different, they do have very similar parallels going on. So anything to make the audience feel like these people have similar journeys, even though it may not look like it on the surface.
I was thinking about how much I cared about all the characters, even though they are on the surface completely unlikable characters. Talk to me about building that sense of caring for these people despite their flaws.
I think as an editor, you have to fall in love with your characters. That's step one. That's either finding something that feels true in the performance, but we were lucky enough that a lot of that was on the script. I think flawed characters are way more interesting because human beings are flawed and we all have things that we're insecure about and wish we could change about ourselves, but we can't. I feel like Amy was a little bit tougher than Danny because Danny, it feels like the deck is stacked against him. But with Amy, she has an affair. She blows up her life completely, and it's hard to root for her. But I think Ali Wong and Sunny's script brings a lot of humanity and depth. And that's why we were so focused early on with making sure people understood what Amy was going through. Because if you understand her right away, you're along for the ride as she's making questionable decisions. So that's why those parallels in the pilot were so crucial for taking you on the journey that they go through.
What kind of judgment calls do you have to set aside to be able to edit someone empathetically?
I was just thinking about when we were talking about making the characters more relatable in the face of all the bad things that they do. And I think 108, which features all of the flashback moments, was really helpful in building the empathy towards the characters, because you're seeing a bit about where their flaws are coming from and their history. So you see where he is struggling with Paul leaving the home and potentially applying to college. And then you see him make that decision to throw away the applications, which is a heartbreaking decision on both ends. That leads to that scene that we talked about in episode 9. That's a completion of that, of, you know, him confessing what he did. And I think really the key to empathizing with these characters that make really problematic choices is a combination of seeing where it comes from and seeing that there's something inside them that wants to be good, but they're just constantly coming up against those flaws, that they're not just relishing being bad, but there's something trying to come out, and it's just this constant cycle that they can't break.
I agree totally. And I think what Jordan was saying about the characters wanting to get to a place of betterment and wanting to improve themselves was similar to how I felt empathetically. It's like I felt myself rooting for them and wanting them to be successful. And then they were inhibiting themselves based on these choices they were making. So in a way, it almost feels like I would imagine a parent and a child, like the child's making these choices and you're like, oh, why did you do that? But at the same time, you're like, I still love them. Hopefully they'll learn from this. I think finding those moments of really disappointment and seeing the reactions of the characters when they find a moment where they're not achieving their goal or they're not hitting what they want was really important. And I think a scene that kind of exemplifies that is in episode 7. Where Danny actually goes to Amy's house and he's like, what do I got to do to get to where you are? And she's kind of like, what are you talking about? My life sucks too. And you see his face kind of drop where he's like, wow, that's not the answer. They almost reached the answer, but then they're just a little bit short. So they gotta keep pushing and keep pushing. So finding those moments and kind of like rooting for the characters, I think, was something that I was always at least trying to do. And then once they failed, okay, let's pick them up and keep on moving.
There's also that scene in 108 when Amy goes back home to visit her parents and that she hasn't been home in a while. They've been on all these trips. They have this whole other life and she's lost connection with them. Yet another way that her character is isolated. And then they have that conversation while they're washing dishes. And she talks about just the trauma of all the things going on between her parents when she was a kid. And she has that line about the generations of bad decisions living inside you. That's another kind of heartbreaking moment that you feel for the baggage that Amy's character is dealing with that has led to all these other decisions throughout her life.
Our goal is always clarity, right? We want to make sure that within each scene and within each episode and in the series as a whole, you may not sympathize with the choices the characters make, but I think it's always really clear why they're making them, why something feels justified or why a situation feels like it's not enough. In order to get to that clarity, you can't have a prejudgment about the actions themselves. I think you have to get into their heads to be like, oh, I have to explain it's because of this loneliness, or I have to explain it's because of this ache, or I have to explain it's because they feel more sinned against than sinning, that they feel justified in their actions. And I think in order to achieve that clarity, you can't be prejudgmental to your characters. You have to ultimately empathize with them in order to convey that. And I think that's the pleasure of inhabiting these lives, because these characters go a little extra step that you might be hesitant to do so yourself. But there's real pleasure in understanding why that's justified for them. And understanding that you might not make that same choice, but to really understand why somebody might be motivated to do that.
Can you talk about why you wanted to do this particular show?
For me in particular, it was wonderful to see Asian American characters at the center and not be heroic, and to be as flawed and as complex as I know all human beings to be. And I thought it was hilarious, too. I also really loved that Sonny was interested in exploring this sense of the void, exploring this sense that what is the thing that we all feel inside us that's like lacking this kind of hole in our hearts. And I was thinking, like, is it even possible to do that in a half hour comedy drama? And the challenge of that felt really exciting. If we could capture that feeling, and I feel everybody involved did such an amazing job. And I feel like that's what is resonating for people and is really exciting for the audience.
Cool. Laura, what about you?
The script came my way, I think, because Harry was going to do the full season, but the start date pushed and he had to go on to a feature. So I knew Harry was attached right away. And Harry and I worked together on season one of Euphoria. And Harry has been a mentor to me. And so the opportunity to work with him again was a huge draw. And so I talked to him a little bit about it. I read the scripts. And for me, like I said, I loved Amy's character. And I think this complex female loneliness when your life looks so picture perfect on the outside, but internally you feel like something is missing, is the really interesting thing. And it's very difficult to convey. And so I was curious to see how we would do that. I thought it was an exciting challenge. And then the other thing that I loved about the scripts were Sonny wrote the needle drops for all the end credits at the end of the scripts. And they were so bold and so funny and so out of left field that I was like, if this is where the showrunner's mindset is, I got to meet him. I got to find out more about this. Because Steven singing Incubus at the end of episode 3 killed me in the script. I remember going to youth group like Thursday nights at the local church because that's where all the cute boys with guitars were. And so that moment felt so true and so just like cringy in the best way. I really wanted to do the show because it seemed so fun and relatable.
Love it. Jordan, what about you?
I saw the initial announcements maybe in Deadline about the project happening. And I contacted my reps as soon as I heard about it, because considering the people involved and the subject matter, and, you know, my dad was born in Seoul in Korea, I'm half Korean, and I've always been excited to have the potential to work on projects like this. And I feel like it's only really been within the last few years that there's even been the opportunity to tell a story like this, and totally building off of what Harry was saying about having flawed Asian American characters and the specificity of what they were trying to capture. There's so many little details that feel really authentic to my life or people that I know. It's always very exciting and cathartic to get to work on projects where you feel that much personal connection to it. So that was something, in addition to the genre and an opportunity to work on something that feels tonally more of an exciting challenge with this incredible group of these editors. The whole team, I think, was just really hard to pass up.
Nat?
I was very drawn to the characters right away. I think just because this is more of a character study than anything else, I thought that was the most interesting and reminded me a little bit of Parasite, which is one of my favorite movies of the last couple of years, where there's just like this dichotomy of the rich and the poor. That was really inspirational. And when I was reading it, I was laughing, and it almost felt like Coen Brothers-esque when everything hits the fan at the end. I knew Steven Yeun was just like an incredible actor just from watching Minari, which Harry taught, which was incredible. So it was really just character for me.
Is that something you got through your agent, or how did you find out about the project?
Yeah, she brought it to me and I read it, and lucky enough to be chosen to interview with Sonny. And just after speaking to him, I was even more intrigued about jumping on, and he was giving me all these references and it was great. I just knew he had a clarity of vision of what he wanted for the show. And he gave this really big, long list of movies to watch that were his references. And so I was just powering through those and being like, wow, this is going to be really special, because there was just this range of good comedy and then good drama and action. I was like, this is going to be really fun. It's not going to be boxed in. It's not pure comedy. It's not pure drama. It's not pure action. It's everything. So those are the types of stories that I love, like where you're feeling all the range. And I thought it had it right from reading the scripts.
Could you tell me what those references were? I would love to know what some of the things were that he suggested you watch.
He was all about Sopranos.
One of the interesting things that Sonny said about the Sopranos is that he thinks it's the funniest show ever on television. And I love that description, because like people think about it as this very serious crime drama, but it is incredibly funny. And I think the humor comes from this deep existential place, right? This like deeply identifiable place of like, how absurd is it that this gangster boss is having to go to therapy in order to deal with these existential issues and these deeply identifiable family issues? And I think that's the off-kilter approach that I think Sonny wanted us to have, is like, how do we keep switching tone? How do we keep creating unexpected situations so that the audience is moved in scenes in which they should be horrified, or laughing in scenes in which it should be deeply sad, and constantly defeating those expectations in order to make the audience feel like, oh, I don't think I've seen something like this before, or this is tonally complex or unexpected and ironic in a way that feels new and feels true. It's like life, because life is so as absurd and as ironic as the show is.
I remember in my first interview with Sonny, I referenced after reading the pilot script that it reminded me of some scenes in Punch Drunk Love, where Adam Sandler's character feels really beaten down by the world, and he's just vibrating with anger and frustration that's bubbling under the surface. And then it just comes out. I remember he bashes this toilet plunger and the glass just shatters everywhere. And specifically, we were talking about that scene because the music in it, it's very minimal, rhythmic, adding a whole other character to the vibe of the film. Those scenes in particular that are emotionally tracking his frustration, that helped me get the job, because he said he was thinking about that stuff as well. So I felt good about that reference.
Yeah, I think those discussions of what you talk to directors or showrunners about that get you the job is very interesting, because it's not what everybody might think it would be. Hey, before we leave, could you guys, assistants are a great thing. I think we all know we owe them so much. I would love for each of you to give a shout out to the team that you worked with.
I want to give a special shout out to my great assistant, Ryan Rombach. He was instrumental with building temps and keeping morale going when we were working on the temps, and just did a great job with sound work and all of the above. Great assistant. Thank you, Ryan. And I'm glad you're enjoying the success of the show. And I'm looking forward to together again soon.
Yeah, same exact thing with Josh Stein, my assistant as well. And I know he assisted you guys towards the end as well. And throughout the process, he did an incredible job building temp stuff and some amazing sound work as well. I had a great time working with him.
Thank you to Lily Wild, who's been with me for a while now. She's my first audience for everything that I cut, and I trust her taste, and she's just an invaluable asset to my process. And I'm so grateful for all of her care and dedication and thoughtfulness and thoroughness throughout this process. It was wonderful.
I was assisted by Josh Stein, and he was a wonderful collaborator. He actually got to do the first cuts of a couple of scenes that are in the first episode. So it was exciting to work on those with him and to actually gain more insight into tonally how best to present the show as we were discussing the scenes together. He's also an amazing visual artist. And so to talk about the art that's featured in the show with him was a true pleasure. And to see him create these bits of artwork too that were inspired by the show. Yeah, a big shout out to him. And he was an amazing help.
Thank you so much, all four of you, for joining me. I really appreciate your time today and your generosity of sharing so much wisdom about the show. I loved it. I hope everybody gets a chance to watch it. I really connected with all the characters, and that's in large part thanks to the four of you. That's it for Art of the Cut this week. Thank you so much for listening. Again, if you'd prefer to read this interview with visual support and clips and trailers, head on over to borisfx.com/AOTC, where there's a ton of great expert content for filmmakers of all types. Also, check out my book, Art of the Cut, Conversations with Film and TV Editors, for a topic-driven, curated look at the craft of editing. Thanks to Harry Yoon, ACE, Laura Zempel, Jordan Kim, and Nat Fuller for joining us on Art of the Cut. Thanks to Ijaz Nuhu for editing today's podcast. And thanks to our partner, BorisFX, and to our sponsor, Jump Desktop. Be sure to check them out at borisfx.com and jumpdesktop.com/cut. I'm Steve Hallfish. Thanks for listening. And please tell all the editors and filmmakers that you know that to get more great Art of the Cut interviews every week, please subscribe on your favorite podcast app.